My name is Priore. Today is January 16th, 2021. I'm interviewing a person that wishes to remain anonymous.
Tell me your name, age, and the pronouns, and where you live, if you want.
Maybe I'll tell you my name later.
Okay.
My pronouns, she, her. My age?
Mm-hmm.
50. And I live in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA.
Okay. Your identity description, how would you identify yourself? Disabled, chronically ill, neurodivergent, etc. And please feel free to include any other identifiers that you want to identify.
Disabled artist. Yes, and I'm on disability for CPTSD. So that they used to say it's psychological, now they're saying it's neurology, so I don't have a label for it. And besides that, though, I have issues with my physical body. Soft tissue damage, connective tissue damage, and I have bone damage, spinal damage.
Okay. So you identify as disabled.
Yes.
Okay. When did you first learn about the pandemic, and what were your experience, like emotions, things like that?
In January, I heard about it and I didn't worry. In March, in very early March, end of February, I started to worry. And then in March, yeah, somebody was vomiting for an hour and a half. And, you know, I thought I was getting emails from somebody, Chinese medicine practitioners who was getting, information from Taiwan early on. So they were like, oh, you probably caught it, you know? And the person who was vomiting, like a roommate, was like, no, I ate raw chicken. Not raw chicken, undercooked chicken. I was like, but she'd follow me around talking to me. She wouldn't let me distance myself. So I found out about it, I guess, January, and I became worried or more concerned late February.
Okay. Do you know specifically where you were, you know, when you found out about it?
No.
No? Okay, that's cool. And what did you have any conversation? What were your first conversations about the pandemic with people?
So I was supposed to go to two states away to get my back treated because I have to pay out of pocket and there's no Medicaid doctor who takes Medicaid who takes me seriously. Yeah, it's for 10 years, they've been telling me to do physical therapy exercises and it made me worse and it shows up in an MRI and it shows up in x-rays and they tell me to ignore it. But so I was supposed to go and, you know, it cost me and I'm on disability and I have very little extra income. I have income from artistic things. So the Chinese medicine practitioner canceled on me. And then I was like, oh, this is serious. And then, you know, later that March with the vomiting person and there, you know, somebody who worked there was like, oh, you got it. No. And I was like, no, I'm in a dangerous place. I have to leave. And like, no, you can't go anywhere. So
that's how you ended up where you are right now. Correct?
Oh, well, yes and no. I moved 6 times in 2020 and I am not at home now because I have to be safe from a dangerous situation. But I was in a dangerous situation in 2018. I was in an unhealthy situation where somebody's filth put me in and out of emergency rooms for 6 months and my skin splitting for 6 months, them changing my meds over and over again. And like my leg was like oozing and seeping. So I haven't had safe housing for 10 years.
Okay.
And I've lived on the streets and I've lived in shelters and I've lived in disability housing where I was poisoned. So.
Right.
And yours.
Okay. How has your experience with the pandemic changed over the course of the last 10 months or so?
So In the beginning, I got out of where I am because somebody on Facebook asked if anybody has needs, and I said I have to keep myself safe from somebody who in December of 2019 started threatening me physically because I told the landlord something, or because I was going back and forth to New York to rehearse. I'm in Philadelphia and I was taking bus trips and weekends to stay with a friend and rehearse for a show. So like his not liking that I had a New York gig and something I told the landlady and other stuff, he started to physically threaten me. I stopped talking to him. He started harassing me, trying to get me to talk. He started acting violent right before lockdown. I got somebody to put a barrel, you know, we were masked, a barrel deadlock on my bedroom door, even if I wasn't supposed to, but I wasn't on a lease, so that, you know. And then he started breaking stuff and his girlfriend started to like follow me around when they were sick. So somebody, you know, said on Facebook, anybody has needs, like, I gotta get out of here. I'm not safe. I think someone's sick. I might have it. And I found a house sitting thing. But since then, house sitting was 2 months. I stayed 2 months in a place where I had a previous roommate spent all his stimulus money and his unemployment. So he was making like, what, more than $3,000 a month. He spent it all on drugs and like stupid shit on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
I think he started switching to Spice and K2 while also not changing his litter box, leaving cat food out for days at a time, burning bed incense, burning bed candles. I started getting COVID-like symptoms. So they said I can leave with 30 days notice, not getting my last month's rent, but also, I lost my deposit because they said I can leave, but they amended my lease to say I can desert without getting my... They amended the lease saying I can leave within 30 days notice, but legally there's other stuff in the lease that I didn't know, or I didn't know how to read, like that meant deserting. That doesn't mean I get my deposit back. So I lost $900 in August. I lost $1,200 because there was a court case and I was gonna, like, landlord owed me $1,200. It didn't go up on the electronic docket. I had moved out of that dangerous place to house it. So I didn't get the physical mail. So I lost that because the trial went without me knowing. And then I moved to this other place where in 4 days I had to leave because somebody wanted to assault me, because the way the landlady described me as a dancer from New York City, which it's true, but it's not that glamorous. But this woman like went crazy on me. And I'm in a place now where there's a person, a fundamentalist, misogynist. Women aren't allowed to dance in front of other people. Men aren't allowed to dance in front of other people, country. Tattoos are not allowed. I have two tiny tattoos. Rock and roll isn't allowed. I toned it down while I was there. I stopped listening to Crass and Anti-Nowhere League. I started listening to like Anthony Hegarty, but no, I'm evil. And then, yeah, he expected me to be his housekeeper. There's rat droppings everywhere and I stopped cleaning it up. So there's like burnt rat shit on the stove. And somebody's letting me stay until he moves out end of the month. So two dangerous, yeah, the person I used to be roommates with who started a habit, he also physically threatened me. Besides the air being too dirty to breathe. And this is June, July. This is before, you know, the information about this virus is coming in. And of course it develops as we go along. March, that person probably did eat undercooked chicken. But I thought I caught it because I was in the same room with her. June, July, I coughed. I had a sore throat most of the time. I couldn't sleep. I thought, like, how do I know if, like, and this is before they were giving tests out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's changed in the 10 months like that. And it's just been, I'm not well. I need housing. Even when I go back, there's a possibility, like my landlady said, the next person who comes in isn't that horrible, abusive, but he's dirty. You know, I don't want to live in a place with cooked rat shit. And if I, you know, if I'm nice and I clean up after them, they treat me worse. So, the good outcome is, like, I'm not like these people. I don't have to have a spice addiction. I don't have to feel like buy thousands of dollars worth of drugs and worthless shit and still feel miserable. I'm not so miserable that I have to physically threaten someone.
Yeah, what has your experience as a disabled person been throughout the pandemic?
I don't have safe housing. When I was in a women's shelter in 2012, I was supposed to get Section 8, but while I was in a women's shelter, like, there was, like, this rule, like, if you're here, I have to actively look for work, I have to actively look for housing. The job I found was a pretty well-paying dance job, so another insecure person, a woman, the social worker told my therapist, my social worker in the hospital who was not part of the shelter, that I refused Section 8 and moved into anarchist housing. Like, this is the kind of stuff that happens. We're not allowed to make a certain amount of money over and lose our benefits. If I lose my benefits, they say they'll give you Medicaid for 3 years, but then, like, it's really hard to reapply. Like, they say it's faster to reapply, but I was doing fetish work. I was, like, abusing, you know, a disgusting man who's cheating on his wife, who's naked, because I wasn't allowed to do work on the books while waiting for my disability. I didn't have to have intercourse or anything like that. But I also, you know, like, I go to strangers' houses off of Craigslist to take off my clothes, and they called it, like, photography. And they did take pictures, and I did sign a release, like, you can show it in a gallery, you can't show it online. But the photos are horrible. They were just trying to get away with, like, what can I get away with on Craigslist? So we can't make a certain amount over. If we did, we lose our benefits. I still, like, there's no doctor that can treat me with what I have. There is a doctor in Southern California. I've been trying to contact him or find programs to relocate me there or to become his patient. It hasn't happened in 10 years. I found a practitioner 2 states away. Before the pandemic, I went twice. They worked on my physical body. I stayed with friends. It wasn't that expensive. Since the pandemic, they moved clinics, so the fee is more expensive. I have to pay for public transportation, a cab to an Airbnb or motel room, go to the clinic the next morning, come back, spend another night there and leave, take another taxi and then the 2 trains, right? That's $550, give or take. I don't have that money. I have to pay rent. I don't have family. I don't have relatives. I pay rent in dangerous places. There's a practitioner 2 states away. I have to pay out of pocket, and there are expenses. That person started to treat me for the disability I have that I get disability for, besides removing things from my back. So physically removing things from my back, non-surgically, started treating me for my CPTSD that I became disabled because around 2000, when I was about 32, 33 years old, I told you I'm 50 now, somebody gave me eye movement desensitization reprocessing, EMDR. And I started to hear voices, and I started to like have dreams of going to hell. And I started to wake up with bruises and cuts. I had PTSD, like I had that before. It was misdiagnosed as depression, but taking two sessions of EMDR put me in a hell of not, like, I guess it's psychosis.
Mm-hmm.
I had to take care of it alone by learning how to meditate and sit 1 hour at a time. But it doesn't go away. You know, I have taken the ticket to work. The process has started, but also has stalled, first because of, I don't know if she was new or she was unethical as a social worker and wanted to send me to places where I would get physically hurt, you know, lifting heavy boxes and also having to interact with people. I would love to go to work, but like anywhere where a person, like sometimes if a person talks about like their childhood, I'd have to leave. Just like if somebody heard about like me having to go on dates with middle-aged men when I was like in second and third grade, they might get triggered. The opposite triggers me. So so during the pandemic, people who can't handle the pandemic took it out on me just because I was there. I was their roommate. Just because like I did take small jobs. I did choreograph for Zoom. I did mentor a young dancer. It's all on Zoom. One of the roommates stand outside my room. He doesn't have to go there for the kitchen or bathroom and hum real loud, you know? And then tell me that I get whatever I want and I have it so easy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one with the substance issues. The other one, oh gosh, I think he just like, he terrorized everybody in the house. So like I heard he moved out. But yeah, disabled people need housing. You know, even if it's a single room occupancy and there's only enough room to sleep in, disabled people need safe housing. And in New York, I was told there's no disabled housing. And I was like cheated out of my possibility for Section 8.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was in disabled housing and I was poisoned. And also they did some weird stuff with my benefits. So I was getting shelter. They cut off my food stamps because they said that they gave me 3 meals a day, even if my social worker told them that's not the case. They also took, they were siphoning shelter, what is it called? Welfare off of the system, even if I moved out after a few months. Because like I didn't sleep, my body was full of scabs, not rashes, scabs from my neck to my thighs. So disabled, like it's not just the pandemic, but like very much so during the pandemic because how people behave.
Yeah, I mean,
we need housing.
We disabled people have always needed housing, but I feel like, do you feel too, like during the pandemic, it's kind of unveiled the need for housing for disability?
So my housing issues started in 2010, 10-ish, 2011, I think. But like where I was threatened in December, right? I dealt with it by like being in rehearsal or like not being home when I don't need to be home.
Mm-hmm.
And staggering my sleeping schedule. So there was that, like, there were places for me to go, or like, you know, spending a few hours in a cafe while working on some writing.
Mm-hmm.
That did, but also that person who threatened me, their drinking went to a different level and they were like breaking things in the house. They were like telling us we have to bleach our food, meanwhile bringing like broken furniture from into the streets and like hoarding it into the shared bathroom because he was already hoarding in the living room and the kitchen, like like that kind of behavior. I was threatened, but I wasn't that scared. It was kind of nasty, but like it didn't go to the level of like shared bathroom has hoarded broken furniture in it, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, screaming and yelling until 3:30 in the morning, breaking stuff on the porch, breaking stuff in the backyard. Then I was like, oh yeah, maybe he'll assault me. Before I was like, maybe he wants to assault me, but I'm not home. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And the same with the other guy who like we got along when we were roommates in a different place. He couldn't handle shelter in place. But he also he couldn't handle all this extra money.
So do you think like the treatment that you received, I know you've all had problems throughout the years, but in these specific situations, do you think it was their reaction to the pandemic towards you? Or do you think this was just how they acted as people?
So they treat me worse, like they treat roommates worse because they can't handle the pandemic.
Right. So do you think a lot of the abuse came to you because due to the pandemic?
It got worse because of the pandemic.
Right, right.
It was bad before, but it's kind of like, well, you're a jerk. And people seem to not understand that, like what we go through,
mm-hmm.
it gives us grit. Mm-hmm. It gives us ways of, you know, like figuring things out. We're actually really good at adjusting. We're really good at like surviving and thinking of different solutions.
Right.
Totally. You know?
Yeah, I totally know. So how has your disability impacted, informed how you personally have dealt with the pandemic?
How am I just, I think that actually these are not like anywhere near how bad it was my first 16 years of my life. So I think I handled it better than able people. Although I'm starting to wonder if there's like mental health issues in all of the United States or all people who have scarcity issues, even if they have, you know, like, yeah. Also, like I said before, like we have grit and we have experience navigating things that other people don't have to. So like I think yeah, the disability, I'm not saying it was a good thing though. It wasn't a fun 2020.
No, it wasn't. What have your relationships with people been like throughout this pandemic? Have they changed? Like, you know, due to like the protocol and all that kind of stuff, like have you had any change in relationships with your friendships due to the pandemic?
So two people have checked in with me. Are you okay? Are you okay? Throughout the person in, well, actually that, yeah, in March, everybody knew that I was living with this person and like, he's kind of fairly famous for being a jackass. So they checked in. But when I lived in this place in the summer, the 2 months, and then like since late August, two people have checked in with me. I know that those people are like people who really are concerned about me. Other people who would like, tell me, well, at least you're not here anymore. Or like people who are like, I didn't know it can be like that, you know, like, but basically, you know, like, oh, I didn't know that, you know, sorry. That's really hurtful. When I was saying, like, he said this, and then this, and then this. Oh, I didn't know.
Right. I mean, people kind of say that about disability as well. I didn't know it could be like that.
And yes, it's different. There's a big impact of Malcolm X on Philadelphia, and those mosques are very different from the kind of person I had to, you know, share a house with, you know. But just because the people in the mosques here, you know, a few blocks away from here are so great, doesn't mean that he's great.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, I learned who my friends are by who actually checked in with me.
So you didn't have to like cut off any friendships during the pandemic because you felt, you know, because whatever, just pandemic related issues, did you feel it, you know, you had to cut off relationships or anything like that? Or
I have friends who have different levels of trusting the vaccine, different levels of where you have to be masked, you know, like mask when you go hiking and there's no one around, unmask when you go hiking. I have not cut off any friends. Like, I had no issues with friendships over things like that. But yes, I have seen that there are different levels of caution, but they're all cautious. Right. They're not at the bar illegally. They're not at a speakeasy. They're right. Not like having barbecues. Like when there was a bouncy house for someone's birthday party in the summer across the street, I didn't say anything on social media or anything, but I was just like, yuck, no. And then, you know, that level of like what you shouldn't do, we all agree on. It's more a subtle increment of what's safe, what's not.
Right. Okay, thanks for talking about that. So you kind of talked about your history during the pandemic of living. So I feel we can move on from this. Okay. Do you have any personal care attendants?
No.
Or anything like that? Okay. Do you feel like your relationships with institutions such as healthcare, government, or media has changed during this time? And if so, how?
So the ticket to work people, because the person who wanted to send me out to these places, I was like, no, like, no. And also I was like, I need safe housing first. And this is 2 years ago, so I haven't been safe. That didn't work out, but they gave me counseling with benefits counseling in case I worked, right? You know, for like, you know, artist fee or honorarium or art sales kind of stuff. And that was great. And then because somebody was going to connect me to this job that she's going to leave because she was she's having a baby and now she has a baby. Right. Mm. So I asked for more benefits counseling and I got it, but I couldn't take it because the person my roommate until the end of the month, and now I'm here in a safe place. Somebody is letting me stay in their extra room for safety reasons. But like at that time when I thought I had a job coming up that might get my benefits taken away, the roommate is like, well, you're loud when you Zoom, you know, like, and I was like, it's going to be in the afternoon. And well, you have to quit in a week. I think you're too loud and I can't concentrate on my studies. You have to quit. And I said, I can't do that to a place that a friend introduces me to. We're professionals here. So that happened. So, you know, that kind of benefit stuff.
Right.
Happened. And then like the institution who is supposed to give me counseling is like, what the fuck? And I was like, that's why when you try to send me to a warehouse, when you try to send me to be a gallery girl, I said, I need safe housing and I need my back fixed first before I can get into work like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, so it was like an organization through Ticket to Work that I have, but I haven't cut them off. It's not horrible. Right. Also, there's an urgent care clinic that I wanted to get tested for antibodies in spring, and because I thought I caught it from one of my roommates, and I wanted to donate blood and also run errands. But then the doctor said that, you know, in early May, he's like, don't even think about like going on mask and running errands in, you know, even if you're nice. We don't know enough about the virus. You know, even if you have antibodies, we don't know if you can pass it on. But you can donate blood. So like that urgent care clinic that had really bad reviews on Yelp, I have a lot more respect. You know, that doctor like explained to me what it means to get an antibody test, the risks, how he as a doctor doesn't recommend it because I'm going somewhere I can get infected. But if he was a researcher, he's like, please come in. If you have antibodies, donate blood. So like, I have a lot more respect for that clinic now. And I didn't have the antibodies, so I couldn't donate blood. But after two like test tubes of blood, I wasn't well for 2 days. So I was like, I'm such a pansy. Maybe I can't donate a pint of blood, even if I had antibodies.
It's so funny.
I was exhausted.
Yeah. So what's been the hardest thing for you living through this pandemic?
Housing, safety. And these, I have figured out that these men are probably in the mind and in the spirit, not very tough, but they're bigger than me and they're men.
Right.
So that's the hardest thing.
So housing and your safety.
Yes.
All right. Have there been any silver linings for you during this moment in time?
Yes. So, besides meeting you and meeting people in disability arts, and starting, because I'm a dance artist, and I had a 20-year career as a dance artist. So I started drawing and making collages again. But the biggest silver lining is that as soon as that clinic opened up and said, I can come, I made arrangements and I did stay in an Airbnb and all that, but I spent all my stimulus money on going to that town to get treated. And then I took work like consulting, you know, and some dance related work on Zoom. I spent it all. So in 2019, I went twice to the clinic. This 2020, I went I was able to go five times. Wait, this January. I was able to go four times, and I was able to go in January, like this earlier this month.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm physically much better. And also, this is financially maybe unfeasible, but I found somebody who can help me with my disability that I'm on disability for. So my back is much better, and I have a better map of how to treat my psychological / neurological disability. I need to find a way to go there, go back and forth, or maybe relocate there. So I'm physically better, I'm mentally better, and I have a map of what I have to do to be well or towards well.
Right. Yeah, that's great. Well, that's it for the interview. Do you have any, first of all, did you want to include any of your social media handles or anything? Okay. And I don't know, did you want to say something like in summary of the pandemic, disability?
I'm not the only one who's disabled who have housing issues. I have friends who are also like different levels of disability who have had nightmares in disability housing, nightmares in like, what do you call it? You know, like you stay there for a while until you get Section 8.
Transitional housing, something
like that. Transitional housing, even when they got waited a year and a half on waiting list and got disability housing, it wasn't safe. It wasn't accessible. This person is mobility also impaired. Like, we need housing. They're saying, you know, back to work, ticket to work. work fair. We need safe housing to be able to get to independent, right? It's not like we die while working because we're not in a safe place.
Right.
We need to be safe first. We need to be well enough to work first. We also need to not be pressured into doing jobs that are like unhealthy.
Right. Okay, thank you so much. I really appreciate you doing this interview, and I'm going to stop this right now.